Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Into the weekend, 100% hockey with John Shannon and Darren Millard. I put you first there because I've noticed you've been a little pouty lately.
I get asked a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you're older and better looking. Why aren't you first?
You know, we're going to talk to a guy today who was a head coach in professional hockey at 28, Ryan Morsovsky. Now with the San Jose Sharks, running the San Jose Sharks. And
which, by the way, he's young enough now at 37 to be my son. You know, he's not much older than my son.
And I don't quite have the strength or the cojones to say this to him, but he's probably tired about talking and discussing the age thing. But it has to be a factor. I do want to put this out there. For the longest time, I was the youngest person at whether it was hockey, whether it was broadcasting, I was the young whippersnapper. And then overnight, I wasn't. And I miss being the young whippersnapper.
Well, I mean, that's been my whole career. Hmm. I produced the Stanley Cup final at age 23. Youngest VP of the company at 26. Youngest executive producer in mid-30s. And now I'm the old guy. I've always marveled at my pal Dick Irvin. Dick Irvin was always the sage announcer, and he always had the great story, and there was always that little bit. By the way, we're going to get Dick on. And now every time I speak, I start to hear Dick tell his stories about the 57 Canadians, like I talk about the 86 Oilers.
Yes. Yes.
You know, age is always going to be a factor.
You know, remember when Wayne broke Gordie Howe's record?
Yep.
We watched that and like, look at Wayne do this. And Gordie played in the league. Like Gordie to me was old. And now I bet you the kids or the kids in their 20s are watching this going, boy, Ovi's great. Wayne, I'm not calling you old Wayne, but I'm just,
Wayne's
it's
old.
Funny
when you
transfer over onto that other side of the line.
I'm old enough. I actually produced games that Gordie played.
Did you?
Sure. 79-80, Hartford Whalers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Gordie and Dave Keon.
Now, Gordie didn't have to wear the long pants, did he?
No.
The CCM tag pants?
No. You hockey nerds are all just fascinated by that stuff.
The Cooper. Because only two teams did it.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of junior teams, though.
The entire CHL did it.
Yeah, it was stupid.
you'd fall down, and if it was fresh ice, if you fell down at Brandon, you'd end up in Swift Current.
Well... Remember Wayne's favorite 50 goal in 39 games. Bill Barber sliding along the ice in his footballs.
He stopped last week.
That's right. Thank goodness for board.
Waiting for the ceremony. I've got a story for you that I'll tell you at the very end. But
have we told
something
have
that
we
I observed.
Told everybody who we're talking to today?
I was just about to do it.
Okay.
Mike Brophy's going to stop by today.
Good.
And this is a special story. Our former colleague at Sportsnet, senior writer at the Hockey News, Mike's run into a challenge right now with his kidney. And we are asking you, right now, I'm telling you, can you like this podcast, elevate his presence, and share it? Because there's a message, because Mike needs a kidney transplant. And the more awareness that we can create from this, it's not about this episode or 100% hockey. It's about Mike Brophy. So if you can all like it and share it, we would be eternally grateful. That's Mike Brophy. And Ryan Warsawski is going to come on in just a little bit. Just waiting for the light to come on.
Have you met
head
him?
Coach, have not met him.
Yeah,
should neither. I tell him that at the start? Like, acknowledge that? Because most guys, we know everybody. Basically, we do.
Between the two of us, yeah.
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 And this is going to be unique.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, you know, I talk about starting young. I used to know players. Then I knew coaches. Then I knew managers. And then I knew presidents. And then I knew some owners. I don't know. I aged with their positions, you know?
I used to want to be, I got to be friends with the players. Like, you got to get along. Not friends, but you got to get along. And the coaches would intimidate me. Now I'm like, I have nothing in common with the players, but I can hang out all day with the coaches or the managers.
Yeah.
It's great.
No, that's the times they are a-changing. But this guy's 37 years old. He's got a job in the National Hockey League as a head coach. And he's on to something special, I think.
Yeah, and a new wave of coaches in the National Hockey League.
Yes, sir.
Riding this. So we will be curious together about getting to know Ryan Warsawski. He's there.
Well, if it lasts 10 minutes, he didn't like us.
I'm going to be firing questions. If we're at 9:30, I'm going to be firing questions because you just said that. Ryan Warsawski of the San Jose Sharks coming up on 100% Hockey with John Shannon and Darren Millard. So this is new. It's never happened before on 100% Hockey. Neither John or I have met Ryan in person or over Zoom. So this is brand new. I apologize for what...
More importantly... I want to know what it was like to play professional hockey in Belgium.
Oh, that's true.
It was a blast. It was a blast.
How much fun did you have over there?
Yeah, it was great. I had a good time. It was good for me. And after college, just go over there and experience playing professional hockey in Europe and meeting new people and living in a small town. And it was a great experience. Got to travel Europe a little bit at the end. And you know, something that, you know, I still talk to the people and some teammates that I played with. So it was a fun experience.
That's cool.
If you had one story to tell people about playing over there, what would it be?
Oh, man. You know, it's interesting because where we played, you know, in the NHL and the professional leagues over here, you practice in the morning. Over there, we would practice at, you know, 6-7 o'clock at night because some of the other guys had jobs. So that was interesting. And then, you know, it's just a different way of life, you know, and, you know, we just used to ride bikes to the game and, or to practices rather, and, live with the other imports and, you know, it was a lot of fun. A lot of friendships were made and, got to experience a different part of the world.
All right. The other one is, you and Jared Bednar and Spencer Carberry all were head coaches in the East Coast League for the same franchise.
Yeah.
What's in the water in South Carolina that grooms National Hockey League coaches?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's a very, you know, Rob Concannon, who's the president there, does a really good job of how professional it is. And we treat it like, you know, it's the National Hockey League and you treat it extremely well. It's a great place to live. It's a great organization from the ownership down. And I think we all, from Bedsy, from Carbs, even Kale McLean, who's in Calgary as an assistant, we're kind of this little fraternity. Jason Fitzsimmons, a pro scout with Washington. it's like a little fraternity of guys that have come out of there, and we've helped each other. And when you're there, you know, I used to call Bedsy all the time when he'd be in Cleveland. And, you know, when Carbs would left, I would be in contact with him. You reach out to Kale and you talk to Fitzy. So a lot of communication. Everyone's there to help each other and get better and move you on to the next level. And again, like I said, it's a great place to live. It's a great organization. And it's a cool little fraternity that we have going down there.
This would be a weird question, but did you realize then how young you were when you were coaching?
I guess a little bit. I think my first job was at Curry College as a Division III assistant coach. And I had played with, you know, the senior class a couple years before. So that's when I realized, well, wow, this is interesting. I'm a pretty young guy on a bench. And then, yeah, as you get to the professional level, you know, you're getting with guys who are probably similar in age and some of that are even older than you. But there was a lot of respect there. I've never had any issues with guys being older than me. And I fell in love with coaching and helping and teaching and seeing players, you know, reach their goals and seeing players get called up to the American Hockey League. And when you get to the American League, seeing players get their first call up to the National Hockey League, that's what I got kind of addicted to and helping players, you know, reach their goals.
The why, you answered the why, but I'm still not, when you were finishing your playing career, did you know this was part of the equation?
Yeah, I knew, you know, pretty young, you know, probably 16, 17 years old, obviously being close with Mike Sullivan. He was coaching the Boston Bruins at the time, Providence a little bit before that. So I'd go down to Providence and watch his practices. I'd go to Boston and watch his morning skates and be around. And I'd be sitting in his office and arguing with him about players. And, you know, I'd tell him I want to be a coach. And then through the summers, as I got into it, he'd be trying to talk me out of it. And I was, you know, not making a lot of money in Division III and in the ECHL. And he was grinding himself, and he had lost his job in Boston and kind of trying to find his way again. And, you know, it was a lot of conversations of him trying to talk me out of it, but I fell in love with it around that time, to be honest with you. I kind of knew in the back of my head, that I wanted to be a hockey coach. At what level, I wasn't sure yet. I wanted to kind of go through the process, and I fell in love with the pro game going down to South Carolina, and then had a quick transition to, you know, Charlotte in the American League and in Chicago, and then the National Hockey League. So, I think that's when I probably first fell in love with the idea of coaching.
So when you talk Mike Sullivan, and I did not know that, about you and Mike, would you describe him as your mentor then, or is he the guy?
Oh, yeah. That
you,
big you time. He was probably my first mentor. He was my role model when he was playing in Calgary and San Jose and, you know, Arizona and Boston. You know, I'd watch every single one of his games. I wore the same number as him when I was growing up. His parents are my godparents, so we're extremely close. We grew up just down the street from each other. And, you know, my Nana died at an early age when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. So I didn't really, you know, have anyone. So his mom was kind of like my Nana. so we were obviously very close and followed his career after he was, you know, done playing and got into coaching, you know, pretty quickly. And, yeah, I think he's been probably my biggest mentor. And then you get to work with people like Spencer and Mike Vellucci and David Quinn. And you picked some things up from them. But I've had a lot of people, you know, through the years, from Mike to Jared Bednar and, you know, meeting John Hines and John Tortorella and Torts, is, you know, I've got to meet him the last few summers and really talked to him quite a bit. So, I've had a lot of people to lean on, which has been very helpful.
The Dave Quinn circle is fascinating too, because when you got to San Jose, David was the head coach, and then you take over and David ends up going on Mike's staff.
Yeah. it was funny how it all worked. I remember I got to a golf course last summer and was golfing with Quinn. He said he was going to Pittsburgh, and it was just, it came full circle, and I still didn't know what was going on here in San Jose. And, you know, a few days later I got off for the job, but a great man, learned a lot from Quinny, great coach. Obviously, you know, I take it from Mike Sullivan. He always said it's a great game and it's a shitty business. And unfortunately he loses his job here, but he's been so supportive, and he's never had to, and he's just really, that's the type of person he is. So I thank Quinny a lot for always being there for me and really bringing me into the National Hockey League.
Your comment about Mike trying to talk you out of it is interesting because I hear that a lot from older coaches to younger coaches. You don't really want to do that. Why do you think that is?
I just think the pressure of it, the stress of it, the business side of it. And we're going through it right now with some losses. And we understand like we're playing pretty good hockey and where we're at as an organization and this rebuild. But, you know, when you're in the National Hockey League, you know, all eyes are on you and that's the truth. And, you know, I remember talking to Bedzie and he's like, when you're relieved and when you lose, you just search for answers. You know, so the grind of it, it's every other day. There's no really days off of that grind, but you also love it. I love it at the same time. And, you know, I think that's what Mike was going through in his days in Boston of just being a younger coach and the stress of it. But I've fallen in love with it since, you know, the ECHL. When I was in the ECHL, that was my NHL. And I put a lot of pressure on myself, but you know, that's how I've always approached it with a ton of passion and competitiveness.
One thing that I've liked in watching your ascent and in some of your availability has been how true to your personality you appear to be. You're not trying to be Scotty Bowman in the answers. You are yourself. Is that a conscious thing?
No, I think I just always in the back of my head, you know, have thought what I'm just going to be myself, you know, and I think, you know, it's the same thing when I'm coaching our players. I am who I am. Will you see, well, if I were to bring you over my house with my family or whether I'm at the park with my kids, I'm probably the same person you see in here in the locker room that I am at home, just because my wife may not like that as much. But I think players can see through you if you're not true to yourself. And as goes with the media, I've grew up, you know, in the Boston area, listening to Bill Belichick and obviously I've listened to a lot of NHL coaches in their press conferences growing up, knowing I wanted to do this. I think the best are the ones that are themselves. And I always say, listen, I was a huge Bruins fan growing up. I used to listen to Claude Julien and Dave Lewis and Mike Sullivan and Mike Keenan and Pat Burns and all their media availability and listen and to see what they were saying. And was there some accountability? And, you know, and I think I try to approach it like I'm still a fan in a sense, and they want to hear, you know, why are the Sharks not winning? Where are we going as an organization? And make that pretty clear. And, you know, I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm true to myself.
We'll get to that, but I want a couple of more questions on this. Because of your age, when you were in the East Coast League, did you have a timeline of when you were getting there, when you wanted to be there? I know Darren and I in our careers, in our business, probably had timelines, but did you have one?
Honestly, no. I never had a timeline whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah, I've always just focused on where my feet are and do the best possible job I could possibly do. And, you know, when I was the assistant coach with Carbs and I was running the penalty kill, I was trying to have the best penalty kill and develop our defensemen, you know, and when I got to Charlotte with Mike Vellucci and I was running the D in the penalty kill, I tried having the best penalty kill and developing defensemen. And then when I got to become a head coach, yeah, you want to win, but in the American League, you want to develop players the best you possibly can to get to the National Hockey League. And I never, ever said, hey, in 5 years, I want to be in the NHL. In 4 years, that was never crossed my mind whatsoever. I just try to be where my feet were and do the best job I could possibly do.
Like you had a really good situation in Chicago. You had a good, you might've had the best pro hockey team in Chicago for a year or two. You know that.
Yeah. We were a solid hockey team and, it was tough to leave there. I wasn't, you know, there was a few hours there for, I was heading back there and going back and I loved coaching there. You know, I got along really well with Roddy and Carolina and the ownership of Tom and Donnie as a GM. I loved my time there, the organization in Chicago. We had a good team. And I was heading back and obviously Quinny gets a job here and it kind of, you know, piqued my interest a little bit. So, you know, I was never in a hurry in looking to the next spot. And I try to, you know, when in my experiences in the American Hockey League with players, I think that happens a lot is, you get a 19, 20-year-old first-round pick, and he, you know, he's got 1 foot out the door already in the National Hockey League. It's like, whoa, let's slow down here, and, you know, this is a hard league to play in. Let's improve your job. You know, let's dominate here, and then we'll get to the next level. So I've always just had a belief in that. And it's hard, right? As human beings, we always look into the future. But I think that, you know, the best mindset is to be where your feet are.
I find that fascinating that you didn't have a route or a map going forward. No. That's incredibly admirable because there's no way I could have done that.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't know. It just is, I'm not a very good networker either. Like, I don't go, you know, you go to these coaches and these drafts and these guys are walking around and I'm just not that good at it maybe. And I let my, you know, job speak for itself. And if you're good enough, they'll come find you. And, you know, I think that's kind of, I've always approached it.
Well, the first time I became aware of your name was when you were with the Wolves and you had great success there. And then your name started to ripple out that, oh, the next step is to get to the NHL. And then you wondered, well, you know what? There's a cycle in coaches in the National Hockey League. We've gone through about four cycles since you started coaching of going back to the old guys and giving the old guys another chance. And right now we're on with you and Spencer particularly. Yeah. To young people getting an opportunity to coach at this league, and you guys are the forerunners of that at this point.
Yeah, I think so. We're starting to see a little bit of a trend, and you know, I think, you know, nothing against the older coaches because there's some really good ones in this league, and Torts and Paul Maurice, and you know, the list goes on. But you see it in the NBA with, you know, Joe Mazzulla in the Boston Celtics, some other young coaches. You see it in the Major League Baseball with some younger guys. And I think that's the trend. And I think a little bit has to do with the generation that's coming up. They're a very different generation back in the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s of guys that are coming out of junior and college hockey, that they're taught a little bit differently. And you have to adjust to that. And I think if you fight that, you're going to be in a long, vicious cycle of trying to get development out of your player. And I think, you know, NHL is coming around to that. And I think the older coaches have really adjusted to that. And, you know, I don't know Paul Maurice, but I listen to him a lot. And I think he's probably one of the best guys to look at, of a guy that's really probably changed his approach in a sense. And his communication style and how he communicates with his players is one of the best that I've seen in this league for sure.
Well, there's no doubt Paul's changed, right? Right, Darren? Paul's changed.
Yeah. Yeah, he's adapted. He's probably changed three times.
Yeah. But yeah, even just in his time in Florida, I think he's changed. I really do.
Yeah.
He was 28 when he got the job in Hartford. Yeah. Have you ever talked about his ascent to him, similar
paths? No, I haven't. I actually haven't connected with him. But we're going to try to connect this summer. I told him, you know, once the season is over, I'd love to connect with him. And I followed him quite often just in his career and obviously last year and listened to him. He's fascinating. And you know, the way he coaches and teaches and communicates with his players.
Okay. So let's talk about your team. How do you deal with Macklin Celebrini on a daily basis?
Obviously a lot of communication and a lot of support, and obviously there's some tough conversations when, through his games and whatnot, but you have to also remember he's 18 years old and he's going through this for the first time in his life. And from media to social media, off the ice to the travel to the grind to playing last night, practicing this morning, the bumps and the bruises and the amount of games that he's going through, the minutes he's playing. So there's a lot on his plate. So there's times where you got to put your arms around him a little bit, and there's times you got to challenge him to be better in some different areas. But he's an ultra competitive kid, extremely self driven, and he's a wonderful young man to work with on a daily basis. And he obviously has a really, really bright future.
How much improvement have you seen?
You know, a lot. And I would say the biggest improvement that we've seen, and he kind of always had it, but the other side of the puck, you know, his defensive responsibility. You know, he's one of those guys where you show him something one time and he goes out there and he figures it out. And I think that is remarkable for an 18-year-old kid, where you sometimes it takes, you know, a guy 7 to 8 years a pro to really figure out, you know, a structure or a D-zone read or an angle or stick positioning. He picks up things extremely quick, you know, and I think that's what surprised me the most. And then on top of it, he is a type of guy that he drags people into the fight. He just does with his competitiveness, his energy before games and throughout the game. You know, and I think that helps our team. And I think
he talks a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's talking a lot. He's on the bench. He's communicating. You know, he wears his emotions on his sleeve, which I think is not a bad thing. Obviously, there's body language and you got to make sure it's in check at times. But I much have that than, you know, have to pull it out of someone. So, again, he's been a pleasure to coach. And we obviously know the future is extremely bright with him and Will and our young players coming.
What have you liked about your team the most this year?
You know, I think for the majority of the season, we've been pretty competitive. We've been in games. We set a record for most, you know, losses in a third period heading in with a lead going into the third. We've also been up there in a record of one goal game losses. So yeah, we've made strides in that sense. And I think our guys have been ultra competitive with all the changes that have happened. You know, I think we've had 10 players off of our roster since day one. I don't think there's another team in the NHL that has gone through that. So, you know, our guys have been mentally tough to keep pushing forward as far as being competitive in a night-to-night basis. And I think that's been something that we really talked about before the season, is getting the respect back in the National Hockey League. Is it fully there yet? Probably not.
You're farther along than I expected you to be. I'll be honest with you there.
Yeah.
You've made strides in that.
Yeah, I think we are. I think, you know, we were saying it this morning, there was no such thing as a standings and you didn't see the wins and losses, we'd be pretty happy with where we're at. You know, we've made some strides. The young players are getting better. We play with good structure. We're competitive. There's good connection in our room and in our ice play. So we've made strides. We're not there yet. But I do think it's going to be sooner rather than later because of who we have in our locker room and who we have coming.
I tell you what, the one place I see it, and I don't know the game nearly as well as you do, but it's your forecheck. Mm-hmm. I think when your forecheck's working, you guys are pretty impressive.
That is very spot on. I've said a lot. And it's been pretty consistent, but when it's on and we don't try to be this cute team and have this blue collar mentality about us, and we put pucks behind defensemen and make them turn and go get it, you know, we have success. We show it when we do and we don't do it very often. And, you know, I think when our players see that and they feel it, you know, the more success we have with it, you know, we're in the offensive zone more. So I would say that's probably been our structure side of it. That's probably been our most consistent.
Which veteran has helped you out the most?
Oh, man. I would say Toffoli and Gaudreau are the two guys that really come to mind, of guys that have obviously won Stanley Cups, been around this league for a long time. You know, and they're different players. You know, Goody is a guy that came in and kind of had to prove himself and make the NHL. He had a start in the bottom, the fourth line, and, you know, find his details in his game to get trust from Pete and Boogie and all the guys that coached here with him and become a really good penalty killer. So he's been really good for the young players that are coming up and having an understanding to stay at this in this league. You have to impact the game in different ways. So he's been obviously super important to lean on and, you know, be a good guy for me, especially to lean on, as is Toph, and a guy that, you know, played for Daryl and who was extremely hard and, you know, in a sense has that old school mentality, obviously. And he's been obviously a goal scorer, so he can help with, you know, the Smitties and the Mac. So I think we get a really good mix of guys that have really helped our young players out. And I would say Goody and Toph are the, you know, head of that.
You ever get the Daryl stories from Tyler?
A little bit. We had a couple of tough practices early in the year, and I asked Toph, I'm like, how was this compared to Daryl's practice? He'd go, oh, man, there's only about two guys that could last some of his practices. So, you know, I think I have a little old school mentality in me. I think we get after it. We have some tough practices. But
what's a tough practice, modern day tough practice for you?
Like minutes wise?
Yeah. And what work do you do?
Yeah, I think, you know, we do a lot of competing stuff, you know, whether that's one-on-one battles, 2-on-2s, 3-on-3, a lot of game-like situations. You know, I think from talking to some other coaches around the league, I think we practice more than a lot of other teams, just because where we're at as an organization and trying to change a culture and trying to help these younger players develop, you need to practice. You need to get the repetitions of doing it. So we practice for 45 minutes some days, you know, and that's a long probably time right now where we're at in the season. Some days it's maybe a little bit shorter than 30 minutes, but we're getting after it. We're not wasting time. So I think our guys have, you know, come accustomed to it now. But I think going into next year, it's just going to get harder and harder because what I've learned is it's hard to win in this league. So we got to practice hard and have an understanding. So when we get into games, it's almost like, okay, we've been through it. We know what to expect. And, you know, I think that's important to have an understanding of that.
And it's hard to find practice time.
Yes. And that's something that's, you know, being an assistant coach for 2 years out here on the West Coast, with our travel, you just don't get the practice time. You know, I joke with Carbs that he's, you know, had double the amount of practices that we've had just being on the East Coast and their schedule. And, you know, we were very front loaded with our schedule and practice and practicing was very limited. And so when you do practice or you have a video session, you have to be super organized and you have to make sure you leave those meetings and it's crystal clear what your meeting was about. And your practice has flow to it and there's organization to it and you're not wasting a minute. Again, because I go back to the generation, they don't want to sit there for 20 minutes and listen to you talk or listen to a video session. You got to be really detailed and to the point.
I just want to follow up on Barkley Goodrow because, let's face it, his return to San Jose was hardly a romantic story. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't want to leave New York.
Right.
And so what was that first conversation like to say, you know, you're really wanted and needed here?
Yeah, I flew to Toronto and met with him in his town, in his where he was living outside of Toronto. And we had lunch, and I told him kind of my vision and the vision of the organization and how important he is to our team. And I wanted to work with him to, you know, get his game back and how important he is going to be to our younger players. And not that he was just going to be a mentor and sit there I want him to play, you know, and I want him to play some meaningful minutes and be the first guy with the boards and the penalty kill and take the important face off. So I wanted him to know how important he was to where we are going. And hopefully he can look back then at his end of his career and be extremely proud of that. So it was about building the relationship with him. And it wasn't just over lunch. It was over the, you know, first few months here we've had. And he's been a good player for us and heart and soul guy. He sticks up for teammates, fights. You know, our players have a lot of respect for him and what he's done in his career.
You mentioned your place with golf. Have you been able to have any fun in Northern California? You and the family go out and experience life up there?
Honestly, during the season, I don't golf because if I do and I suck, I get extremely frustrated and upset.
What's your cap?
But, you know, honestly, you know, I have 2 young little ones and usually on an off day, I'll go into the rink for a little bit and then come home and try to be with them. And that's been the tough part is you don't see your family very often. And, you know, I have a super supportive wife that's been through this and honestly been through it since day one when I first started coaching at Curry College. So she's used to it and does a great job at home. But as your kids get older, you miss a lot. And, you know, talking to other coaches and with Bedsy and Carbs and Heinze and all these guys and even Sully when he was going through with his younger kids, you do miss a lot and you give up a lot, you know, and that's hard. So you have to have a really, you know, big support group at home. And thankfully I do, because obviously this year there's been some tough losses. But when you go home and you see your kids, they're happy, right? Mm-hmm. And that helps, you know, it's like having a dog, you know, they don't know if you want a loss. So when I see my 5-year-old, he'll remind me how many goals we scored. But he's happy to see dad. So that's been a, you know, really, really helpful for me.
That's cool. Hey, so I'm just curious. So has age ever been a factor for you in this job? Is there just, you know, there's no ever discussion that this guy's like, you're younger than Vlasic.
Yeah. Honestly, no, I've never had an issue. I treat these guys with respect. They treat me with respect. I've never had an issue in anywhere I've coached with it. I think the players usually know I have the best interest for them. I want them to get better. I'm in it with them, you know, and I say that in day one in all my training camps. It's not me versus you or you versus me. We're in this together. I'm going to push you and challenge you to be better than you've ever thought you could be, whether you're 37 or you're Vlasic and it's had a, you know, one of the greatest careers as an NHL defenseman, or you're Will Smith and you're 19 in your first year in the league. I'm going to push you to be as best you can be. And it's going to be open communication. I don't have all the answers, you know. I'm going to learn and try to get better, just like I'm going to ask you to get better. So that's kind of how I approach it. I've never had any issues with my age, and I think there's a lot of respect. Kind of goes both ways.
You talked right at the top about how happy you were when you helped an East Coast League guy get elevated to the American League and the American Leaguers to the NHL. What's it like to be a coach when you see a guy that you've worked with for a couple of years get traded?
Yeah, it's tough. That's tough. That's the, you know, my, you know, I'm very important is building the relationships with players. And then all of a sudden in this business, you know, a Zetterlin gets traded, right. Guys move on, and that's tough. It pulls at your heartstrings a little bit. Not so much because you improved them as a hockey player, but you built a relationship of who they are as a human being. So those are the tough moments as a coach, when you move on from the Chicago Wolves and you work with those players and you put so much into it and you build those relationships, and the same thing it goes when you're here in the National Hockey League. That's the shitty side of the business that really eats at you. But it's funny, you look back and there's a lot of players I still talk to that I coach in the American League, or you go play Boston and you see Morgan Geeky after the game, you go play Calgary, you see Jake Bean after the game, and they text you and, hey, you know, Jack Drury and Nason and Chatfield. And like, that's the coolest part of the whole thing, you know, is that relationship part of it, is having that relationship that you can look back in 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now and see Jack Drury get married. And you won together and you do all these things and you remember that. But the biggest thing is you remember the memories that you had with them and the relationship that you have with them. I think that's the coolest part of this business and the coolest part of this job.
I can see that means a lot to you.
Yeah, it's emotional. Yeah, I
that's all right.
There are my emotions on my sleeve, and it usually gets to me. Just, you know, I have a big heart for those guys and what they've done, and they put their bodies on the line and they play through injuries. And I think that goes unnoticed for a lot of people.
Is there a player in particular that you guys went through a lot together and you both came out of it? You're in the NHL, they're in the NHL.
I think Stefan Nason comes out big time. Nace was a guy, obviously a first round pick, had some success early, you know, struggled in, you know, getting sent down, you know, couldn't find an American League job, went to Wilkes-Barre, you know, kind of fiddled around there. You know, we signed him in Chicago, came in a little disgruntled, a little misunderstood, and you had to peel the onion back a little bit. And you know, we worked hard on him and his body language and how we needed to play with and without the puck, and, you know, more so his leadership responsibility and how, you know, there's, you know, scouts in the building watching you and you act out and you bang your stick. That doesn't look too good, Nace. And I think, you know, he's a great kid. He just was a little misunderstood and he needed a little love. And, you know, I think he's one that really jumps out to me just because, you know, I think he was probably written off. And now you look at him now and he's, you know, up close to 20 goals, I think, for the New Jersey Devils. And you watch him and he's competitive every night and he's in on puck battles. And I think he's really helped that team in New Jersey quite a bit.
Finally, for me, you talked about Mike Sullivan when you were a teenager listening to you and talking to you. And are you paying it forward? Is there somebody that's talking to you? Are there young guys that are phoning you, texting you?
You know, I think it's funny when I go to the draft, and it'll be different this year, but last year at the draft, I talked to a lot of the ECHL coaches, and a lot of those, there's some young coaches in there that have bright futures that want to learn, that want to get better, and I'm trying to help them. And I think that's important to help the generation that's coming and help the younger coaches that are coming. My dad always said, don't forget where you came from. And I think that's super important. You know, I was in ECHL for 5 years and I loved every second I was there. I loved the grind. It was tough days. It was tough travel. There was buses breaking down. But I embraced it. I loved it. And I think it's important to never forget, you know, now that I'm sitting, you know, in private charter planes and nicest hotels in the league, it's awesome, but I'll never forget. I still had just as much fun and joy in coaching when I was there.
Did you have one of those sleeper buses?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Those are
I actually used to sleep pretty good on those things.
I like those.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a rhythm to those buses that helps me fall asleep.
Yeah. I would get right up in the top bunk. Carbs would be underneath me and we'd fall right asleep. And I think I was probably the best night's sleep I've had.
No thanks.
Really?
And then the rumble, you hit the rumble strips, you'll get a little worried.
If a former player comes to you and says, I'm thinking about getting into coaching, what do you tell them?
Get ready. No? If you want to do it, you got to be all in. You know, and I think that's, you know, former players, they think it's easy as well. There's difference between playing and teaching and coaching. There just is. And nothing against guys that have played in the league and coached in the league for a long time. I think there's some that are really good at it. But when you jump into this thing, you got to jump in with 2 feet. And I think you got to be fully committed to it. The hours, you know, you know, we played last night and you're right back at it, you know, 6:30 in the morning, breaking down video and you got to be all in. If you're just going to come in with 1 foot, it's going to be short lived.
Don't burn yourself out.
Yeah, that.
No, you gotta learn to pace yourself, right?
Yeah. You know, I think early in my career, especially when I got the head coaching job in South Carolina, you know, I remember I used to stay at the rink on game days and lay down on my floor. And, you know, I remember I got to, you know, February, March, and I was like, man, I got to get outside and get some sun and just see what the outside world looks like. So, you know, I think that's something I've learned throughout the years of, you know, you got to let go at times and the best you can and get outside and find a hobby just because it will take over your mind at times.
Floors and bus bunks. We've learned a lot here.
The glamour of coaching. That's
I could write a book about that league.
Tell you, if you have to get up and go to the bathroom, it's easier off the floor than off those bus bunks, though.
Oh, yeah. You got to climb down. The thing's moving side to side.
Yeah.
Holding on for dear life.
I'd love to see John get up and down.
No. It's not happening. I'm on the private charters with Ryan now. That's what I am.
I don't blame you.
Pleasure getting to know you, buddy. And it's been fun to watch the evolution of your team. It truly has. And there's a route there now.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. It was great meeting you guys as well. You guys do a great job. So thanks for having me on.
We'll be back with more 100% Hockey with a special conversation with Mike Brophy right after this. 100% Hockey with John Shannon and Darren Millard continues. A slightly different twist. We're going to talk some hockey, but we're also going to ask you, our listeners, to help us out and really assist a good friend of ours, a longtime buddy and coworker. Here's Mike Brophy, who was at the Hockey News forever, the senior writer, and was also a contributor at Sportsnet at the Hockey News show, and then into our nightly games. And you're running into a bit of a challenge, like some people do at the certain age. Brof, how are you, first of all? And then we'll get into what you're dealing with.
Well, all things considered, I'm doing pretty good. You know, obviously, I have kidney disease, and I really need a transplant. But in the meantime, I've been doing dialysis for the last month, which is 3 times a week, 4 hours per session. And it's not the worst thing in the world. You know, with what I've been going through, the dialysis really cleans out my system, purifies my blood, because my kidneys just gave me the middle finger and said, you know, we're not doing it anymore.
So, Mike, I'm curious, how do you find out about having kidney disease? Or is this something that you found in a regular checkup, or was this something special?
You nailed it, John. A little over 20 years ago, I tried to increase my life insurance policy. And of course, to do that, you have to do a medical. And it came back that I had kidney disease. So the insurance people said, see you later. And I've been dealing with it for over 20 years, but it's always been in check. You know, I go to my kidney specialist 2 or 3 times a year. I do blood work. They check my numbers. But it progressively started getting worse until last January. My wife and I went away on a 3-week vacation to Curacao. great vacation. Everything was cool. The week I got back, it turns out I picked up a bug and a virus, and it stayed with me for 10 years. And for all intents and purposes, it started shutting down my kidneys, and everything just tumbled from there.
So explain. Okay, so not everybody understands what dialysis does, and you just basically sit in a chair and they clean your blood?
They do. I've got something attached to my chest. It's built in with tubes, and they attach two tubes. One takes the blood out of my body, puts it through a machine. It filters the blood, cleans it, and the other tube sends it back into my body. And you know, for a lot of people, it sounds scary, and it's really not. I swear, I lay there. I put my headphones on. I'm in a room with, I think, 16 people. We all have our own little area. I listen to music. I read a lot. The 4 hours, depending on the day. Most days it seems to go quickly. The nurses are just unbelievable. You know, when we hear about what's going on in our medical system and how nurses aren't being paid, I've been through a lot in the last year, and I can tell you nurses are angels, and I'll leave it at that, but I wish they'd get what they deserve.
So what's the next step for you? You said transplant?
Yeah, the next thing, I mean, a transplant is going to be the greatest thing that will ever happen, because the doctors tell me it gives me 20 to 25 more years to live. Without the transplant, I'm on a clock. You know, I mean, you can do the dialysis 3 times a week, but when your kidneys just aren't working, eventually time runs out. So I don't mean to sound dramatic about that, but the fact is, you know, people have responded unbelievable with the publicity that I've received through this. You know, I really count my blessings. It started with Mike Davies of the Peterborough Examiner, where I kind of got my start. And then, of course, Ron McLean mentioned it on Sportsnet Hockey Night in Canada. Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun put it in his very, very popular column. And I've had so many people reach out to me. I feel humbled and blessed.
Let's get the word out further how people can help you and become a candidate to assist you with a kidney transplant.
Well, you know, if you go to my Facebook page and scroll, you'll see that I put up the card for the Ottawa Hospital. And there's a program called PAIRS. And that's what we're signed up to. People can go through the process of seeing if they're a good candidate to be a donor by getting their blood checked. And they can reach out to me. I can forward them to where they need to turn to. I've had a lot of people respond. I've actually had 7 people step up to the plate who are going through the process right now to see if they're a candidate. One as far as California, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've had people in the United States. My wife was the first one. Marilyn was the first one. She went through 80% of the process. We just got the word last week that she's not a candidate, but she's going to continue with the process, and she is going to offer a candidate to somebody else, or offer a kidney, pardon me, to somebody else who needs a kidney. And that moves me further up the list if she does that.
So it's A and O type blood, correct?
Yes. A is the number one. Marilyn was an O, but there's a whole bunch of different factors that are involved. And for whatever reason, it turned out she wasn't a candidate to be a donor, but A is the best.
All right. Well, we'll post it on our on all of our social media as well over the next day or so, so people can, and the phone numbers of the Ottawa Hospital. Never mind this though. Let's talk about hockey. How about those Senators?
Yeah, it's been an interesting season. You know, when you live in Ottawa and you're not an Ottawa Senators fan, and you listen to sports radio, you listen to they get so excited when something new happens, like, this is our savior. We got a defenseman. He's the next Bobby Orr. And then 6 weeks after the guy's played, it's more like, well, he's not the answer. And you know, I kind of feel their pain, to be truthful, because there's a lot of up and down with the Ottawa Senators. My sense is they've got good ownership now. They've got a very good, I think, a good potential rising star in Steve Staios. You know, we got to know Steve, obviously, in the Toronto area. And I think he's a guy who's, everything he does is not the instant fix. I think he's very progressive in the moves he makes to help this organization get a little bit better a day at a time.
You've got a situation where it's Montreal and Ottawa battling, and so that's created the interest in the region, but also the rivalry. Are you surprised at Montreal? Were you one of the people that thought the Habs would be in this mix this year?
I'm a little surprised. You know, I have faith in their leadership at the top. I think they've got a lot of good people. You know, I like you guys too, maybe. I look at their star players and they're on the smaller side, but then I look at what Marty brings to the table as a coach and what he had to go through as a player to gain acceptance as a small hockey player and to prove to the hockey world that he belonged, you know, and I think he's been able to get that message through to his very skilled smallish players. And now they're turning into impact players. Now, of course, you have to surround those guys with a bit of size. I don't know, when I watch Montreal play, they just play with a passion and a determination that I don't think it's going to get them to a Stanley Cup at this stage, but boy, oh boy, they're hard to play against.
Well, I quite find them fun. I as you know, I'm a Nighthawk. That's why we always work those late nights, Mike, is because we're the Nighthawks, and we did all those late Vancouver and Edmonton and games in California. And I watched them again last night in Seattle. They didn't win, but boy, oh boy, I think they've become one of the most entertaining teams in the game.
I'll give you that. I think they're unbelievable. And I think some of their players are really gaining recognition now towards the Olympics and the international competitions.
So I've got to ask you one more question about your background. And if people don't know, you are a legend in the OHL. You're writing in Peterborough for the Examiner and around the Peets. I mean, if you're not in the Peterborough Peets Hall of Fame, you should be. For all the coverage you gave those guys and the amount of people you know in the game and players you saw cover firsthand in the game, Mike, I've got to ask you, have you followed the whole concept of what's going on with the CHL and NCAA?
I have. I wouldn't say I have a firm grip on all that's happening, but I don't know. As I've gotten older, I feel that anything that gives the player a choice or an advantage, different options, I'm for. You know, I love junior hockey to the nth degree. It was what I was raised on as a kid growing up in Burlington. The Hamilton Red Wings with Freddie Speck and Danny Loss and then Jerry Gray in net and René Leclair, you know, they were my first introduction to hockey, and I loved junior hockey. So when I see these kids now, you know, you get pigeonholed a little bit in the past in junior. You go to a team, that's your team, and you don't have many more options. And now kids have options. You can try your luck at junior, and if it doesn't work out, you still got a shot at playing NCAA. My godson played for Western Michigan, so I got to see what he went through in that program. And I love the fact that kids have options.
I can't believe that we became friends, you and Peterborough, with the Bob Atwell memories of being Brandon. Like, that
some
still sticks
days
with
out
me.
Out in the Memorial Cup out west.
Oh my goodness, that was a heartbreaker way back when. You still like the tough part of the game?
You know, I do. I think I've gone on record as saying I don't necessarily as much like the fighting the way I used to. I used to go to a hockey game.
No, you were a brawler.
And if there wasn't a fight, I went home and I feel like I got shortchanged. Now, when I look at that big thug playing for the Rangers, and you know, you look at the way the skill has evolved in the game, I don't think you need it as much. And there's still times, however, when I'm watching a game with Maryland and it gets heated, and I say to my wife, you know, even if it was a game misconduct, I would have dropped my gloves on that play, because you got to do what you got to do.
Hey, listen,
Matty's a player.
Matt Rempe can play the game too.
Yeah,
he's a player. I wish somebody would get a hold of that guy and say, you know what, you're not fighting for the next 3 months. You're playing hockey, and then we'll get back to the fighting. We'll talk about the fighting later. I'd love to see the kid play the game.
I actually like the way he can contribute to the game. It's just there's nobody tough enough to or big enough to go after him. There's lots of tough guys, but there's just eventually size becomes a determining factor when you're that big.
It's funny, when I go on YouTube and I watch some of the fights that he's involved in, it's amazing how many guys that are 8 inches, 7 inches shorter than him, because they're good fighters, they're able to hold their own. Mm-hmm. You see guys that are right-handed punchers all of a sudden switch to the left, and it confuses Matt a little bit.
Well, I lost the over-under. I didn't think we'd talk about fighting in this show.
Nice try. You
know, I guess, but Brof and I are on the opposite sides of that ledger, so that's okay. Listen, we always used to have fun on the set talking hockey, so it was good.
Absolutely.
So let's go ahead, Darren. Sorry.
I was just going to mention the producer of this podcast. You don't know this, Brof, but it's Hugh McClarity. That's the son of Bugsy, John McClarity, who was our producer on the Hockey News show way back when. So isn't that amazing how it all ties together when we were sitting there for 2 minutes in the box with Kipper and doing everything?
Talking about doing the over-under. How many times is Kipper going to do it? Hey, you know what? I'll give Kipper credit. He came in as green as green could be, and look at what he's risen to now. I mean, he's an impactful voice in the world of hockey. So kudos to Kipper.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you too, Brof. We're thinking of you. We're thinking for you. And we will try to help you get the word out. And let's hope the next time we're talking, it's when you're on the way to the operating room for that transplant.
Well, that would be great, John and Darren. Like, thanks so much for having me on. I greatly appreciate it. It's great to catch up with you guys.
You're the best. Miss you, buddy. Glad you're on the way to getting the word out, and we'll get you healthy soon.
Thanks very much. I appreciate this.
Boy, it's good to see Brof.
That was great.
Awesome. He does look great.
Yeah.
He hasn't changed.
Yeah, what I didn't realize was, in talking to him, is all the years that we worked together, he was struggling with this kidney disease. And never once were we sitting around lamenting that we were working at 12:45 at night. Never once did he feel sorry for himself about what he was going through.
No, because he would say, "Can we go now? Can we go now?"
But he never complained about, I mean, lots of people, Darren, you know, lots of people that once they have a stubbed toe, they remind you that they have a stubbed toe for the rest of their life. When you're diagnosed with kidney disease, I admire his professional fortitude when we worked together. We had a ton of fun. We laughed a lot.
The favorite thing or most memorable piece that he ever did was, in the tradition of winning the Stanley Cup, every player or person at a certain level in the organization gets their day with the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Mike talked to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and in a February day or a November day, I can't remember when it was, he got his day with the cup and wrote about it and took it back home and showed it around. And it was just something that we would all love to do, but we're not players. But we thought about, what would we do with our day with the cup? And he did that. And that
we had, I had it for 3 days once. So
3 days.
Yeah.
Well, that's a one upper.
Yeah, I know. And we would phone, we had a party and we phoned friends and said, "Hey, we got the Stanley Cup." "You're lying. That's not true. You're making fun of us."
What year was that?
A long time ago, 1978.
How'd you get it?
It's a long story. It's a long story.
Princeman and I had the Grey Cup one time when we lived together in Winnipeg. We got to keep that overnight, but I never had the Stanley Cup. Memorial Cup I've had, but
yeah. Well, you're a trophy legend.
Right. But I'd trade them both in for the Stanley Cup for a day.
It was That'd be pretty cool.
Mentioned this earlier. Can you share this episode? Because we're trying to help Mike out and everybody on a transplant list. You just raise awareness to it.
Is it on your driver's license, transplant list?
Yes.
Yeah, it's on mine too.
Yeah. Here's a funny story. My daughter got her license last year and you're filling out that form.
Yeah.
And it says transplant, organ donor.
Yeah.
I'm like, click yes. She's like, yes? I'm like, yeah, it's to help people out. She goes, I had an organ transplant. Like, no, it's if you, something happens and you can donate an organ. You haven't had one yet. She was perplexed. Like, how did I miss that? But it is. It's an important.
It is. All right.
A little bit of levity in conversation.
We try to avoid these types of conversations on this podcast, but this is an important one. Yeah, this is an important one. So
like it and share it as much as you can. One bit of hockey news before we go. Did you happen to see the shootout involving the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Yes.
Did you see how fast Braden Point
wasn't that? I want to know why every guy doesn't do that.
It was like he was being chased by a back checker.
Fantastic.
It was the fastest shootout attempt of all time. And the best part is he scored.
Well, that's the only thing that counts.
Right. But if he didn't score, maybe he doesn't do that again. I thought that I took that away.
I'd be telling my whole team to go in with speed. Go in with speed. So,
well, now that you're telling Ryan Warsawski about his forecheck.
No, I was just telling him how much I think that their forecheck is good. And then I'm old enough to be his father. Come on.
You were good during that conversation.
But as opposed to...
I don't like to pump up your tires too much. We do a lot of joking back and forth. It's easier to rip each other down. But you asked some great questions during that conversation with
Ryan. I'm a professional journalist.
Will you just take the compliment?
I don't know how to.
Well, then say goodbye.
Goodbye.